Coming up on this episode of the NHL At The Rink podcast, we're actually at the rink. It's the Stanley Cup Final Media Day in Edmonton. We talk all things Cup Final. We have Derek Van Deest, our writer from Edmonton, Tom Galitti talking Panthers. We got quotes, we've got analysis, and we've got predictions. All that and more coming up on this episode of the NHL At The Rink podcast.
NHL At The Rink is presented by Skip, the official food delivery app of the NHL.
Welcome into another episode of the NHL At The Rink podcast. Literally, at the rink this time. It's presented by Skip. Skip to the good part and get groceries, meals, and essentials delivered right to your door on Skip. Sean, we're back. Edmonton. Well, last year we started in Florida. This year we're starting in Edmonton, but everything looks familiar. We're actually sitting in the practice rink right now, which is the media center. It's where Media Day was today, Tuesday. Game one is Wednesday, tomorrow night. We are in the top of the stands of the practice rink, just outside the same room we worked in last year. It all seems so familiar here.
It seems familiar to everybody. And you think about all the places that we've done the podcast in the last 3 years, bathrooms, side rooms. This is spacious and glorious. But it is, I mean, I think that's the theme here is the familiarity. These teams know each other. You know, I was here yesterday for practice, and I asked one of the Edmonton players, I'm like, does this feel like game eight?
Yeah.
Right? Like, and they were like, no, like, this is different. Like, this, it starts all over and whatever. But it could literally be game eight. It could be a best of 11 or a best of 14
yeah.
or whatever you want to call it. The first one to seven wins, right?
Eight. Your math is off, but it's the fourth round, so yeah. I'll give it to you.
Yeah.
It's been a lot of travel. Yeah. It's all right. I'm lucky I remember the day, so I'm good with that. No, listen, I do agree with what they're saying, though. Like, it's different because it is different. It's the same teams. It's the same coaches, the same setups, the same core group of players. But the Oilers are a year older. They've got experience. Connor McDavid talked about that. Like, last year it felt like this was monumental. This year it feels normal, right? For the Panthers, well, they went back last year having been beaten up pretty bad the year before and losing to Vegas. So they had that experience, and now they have the unique experience of coming back as a winner too. The Oilers don't have that yet, right? But there are differences. The Oilers feel they're better because of the experience they had, what they went through, learning what it takes to start this series. They were down 3-0, let's not forget. They forced a game seven. They lost that, and that feeling is still with them. The Panthers are better because they understood what it takes to win this series and how hard that fourth win really is. Not a cliche. They've lived it last year. So I do think it's a little bit different in that sense.
It's always going to be different because there's new ingredients, right?
Yeah.
And you don't know what's going to happen. I mean, you look on the Florida side, and it's Brad Marchand and Seth Jones, two huge pieces, right? And Marchand has been huge in this whole process for them, much bigger than I think they thought when they got him, right? Third, fourth line guy, but he's contributed big goals. He's a huge part of their leadership group already. He's been fantastic. And Seth Jones is just, you know, you look at that Florida D, and I was asking a bunch of guys today, like Nate Schmidt, right? Like, as a defenseman, is Florida the place you want to go? They're like the land of misfit toys. It's like Aaron Ekblad and a bunch of guys that nobody else wanted that – the Florida Panthers turn into superstars and get huge contracts. Like, I think every underachieving defenseman in the National Hockey League wants to go find the Fountain of Youth in South Florida.
And they find their roles, and they find perfect roles. But I'm glad you brought up Brad Marchand because, you know, I asked him at Media Day today, I said, what was your mentality when you got traded here to Florida? Not here, to Edmonton, but to Florida. What was your mentality? His answer was, I loved his answer, and the best part about it is we recorded it, and we could play it for you right now. Here's Brad Marchand on his mentality when he got traded to Florida.
You know, when you look at the lineup, I was honestly like, I think I'm playing fourth line again, you know, back to my roots. So I was like, you know, it is what it is. I honestly didn't have many expectations. I knew playing against the Panthers this year that they were the team that I felt in the East was the team that was going to make a run. So I was just excited to be part of it. And I didn't have expectations of where I was going to play or what I was going to do. I honestly was like, this is a new experience for me and one I haven't been through before. And it's a great learning opportunity for me. So I was going to just go and enjoy it and try to have fun every day. And it's a different situation for myself just because my family is not around. So I honestly feel like a young guy again, where I'm just going to the rink. All I have to do is play hockey, go there, and then, you know, outside of that, just hang out with the guys and have fun and get to know them. So it's a different opportunity than what I'm used to. And I was just excited to be here. I wasn't really with the depth this team has and the guys that the leadership group that they already have. Like, it felt easy to kind of come in and just kind of follow suit and watch what the guys do. And just be part of it. So, yeah, it's a good opportunity.
First off, Sean, the guy's a quote machine. Thank God he's in this series because, you know, he's a go-to. You can get him every time. He's just wonderful in that way. But the perspective that Marchand has, you just love it. He thought he was going to be a fourth liner. He was going to go back to his roots, you know, and it's just hockey all the time for him. And if we can flip it, speaking of hockey all the time and an opportunity, the most important, most impactful, the best player in this series we all know is Connor McDavid. We're going to touch on him a little bit more when we bring in Derek Van Deest, our staff writer from Edmonton, who covers the Oilers for us. He knows McDavid very well. And we also have Tom Galitti. He'll give us a little more of the Panthers' perspective, so that's coming up. But the drive to win that Connor McDavid has, it is Sidney Crosby-like, if you will. Do you think that's a fair comparison?
I do, and I think, you know, the one thing that he learned this year, like, when you think about Connor McDavid and how great he is, he hasn't won anything.
Well, he won the Four Nations.
Most great players are so good that they win at the junior level. He was on a dominant team in Erie in juniors, and he never won. They fell short at the Mem Cup, and he hasn't done it here yet. And then he goes to the Four Nations, and he's around winners. Brad Marchand, Sidney Crosby, Nathan MacKinnon. He sees Sidney Crosby in a game against Finland blocking shots because he wants to win so desperately. He sees the way that Nathan MacKinnon prepares for a game, the way he attacks a game, the way he thinks about a game. He sees Brad Marchand and how nothing ever bothers him, no matter what the score is, no matter what anything is. And I think as an elite athlete and somebody who wants to win, he's taken all that in like a supercomputer. And now he's spitting it all back out. Well, I learned this from Sid, and I learned this from Nate. And he walked away with the confidence of being a champion in the Four Nations. And you're really seeing it now because he's been able to process everything. And I'm going to lead you to the promised land.
And Stan Bowman, who got the job with the Oilers as the general manager before the start of this season, he talked about that today, about McDavid's drive to win and how he learned about that. And it was in a first conversation that he had with McDavid. And here is Stan Bowman talking just about that conversation.
Well, the first time I talked to Connor, I went to see him in the summer after I started. And all he talked about was, I just want to win the cup. That was it. We didn't talk about anything else. So his focus is, this is his singular focus. Like, he's accomplished everything he could accomplish individually in this sport. And he continues to dazzle us, you know, every game, every round, makes a difference. Incredibly motivated and driven to win. I can't think of, you run out of superlatives to talk about him as a player and describe what he does on the ice. I think the thing that's equally impressive is the way he is, you know, driving our team with his determination. And you know, there's no one else you want to go to battle with than someone like that. He's our leader. Not only is he impressive with what he can do on the ice, but his focus and driving us. So you could see how bad he wanted it last year when it didn't go Edmonton's way in game 7. And right now He's on a mission.
Sean, you could hear in Stan Bowman's voice and what he was saying, the level of respect he has. This guy has been around elite players. You know, he's won the Stanley Cup as a general manager with Patrick Kane, with Jonathan Toews, and he sees that you know, in Connor McDavid now. It is just like, it's almost unfathomable to me that the guy won't win the cup because of the drive to win.
Yeah, and Stan has been around so many great players, not only as a GM, but as the son of a GM.
The son of Scotty.
Yeah, a coach and a GM. Yeah. Scotty's here for game one, 91 years old. That's a great story in and of itself. Between the two of them, 17 cup finals. One family, it's like the birthright of the Bowmans.
Yeah.
Well, right? And so he knows great players and he knows what makes them work. And it hit him immediately. He went, that was his first trip, was because he's the linchpin, right? Let's find out what our guy's about. Very Jonathan Toews like. He knew right away. And you'll know why when you hear Connor McDavid talk about the Stanley Cup final this year.
I think there's familiarity there. You know, we know what to expect from their game. I think they know what to expect from ours. You know, they're an aggressive, in-your-face, quick team. You know, we played a team like that in L.A., I would say. So, you know, there's a little bit of that familiarity there. Obviously, they're, you know, they're the champs. It's their third final in 3 years. They're a great team. You know, you can't say enough good things. So, as I said, they have our complete focus. It's going to be a great challenge, and we're excited about it.
Well, if you couldn't tell, it's definitely businesslike for Connor McDavid. He's comfortable. He knows the moment. He understands the moment. He certainly knows what's at stake. So no question about it, this guy is driven. And the guy who's covered his entire career, Derek Van Dieste, he works for us with NHL.com. And we talked to Derek about McDavid, but about the Oilers and everything. So you're going to hear Derek. But before you do, here's the Oilers coach, Chris Knobloch, talking about a big change for this team going into this series from what he's seen this season.
There's one thing about just having a defenseman to be able to just get it out of trouble and get it out of the zone. But if we're continually just getting it out of the zone, we're giving the puck back and then we have to defend and we're just defend. It's not a good recipe. And, you know, you think about the way our team has played, especially our defense. Defense has been great at moving the puck and we're able to get the puck in our hands because we feel our strength is obviously our McDavid, Leon, our identity is just being a good puck-moving team. And, you know, if you don't have the defenseman that can make those good plays and pass the puck up to the forwards, you're not a puck-moving team. So I think it was great additions to have Klingberg and Wallman. They've been doing a phenomenal job as a group. And now we've got just inserted Ekholm back into our lineup just to alleviate that pressure from the forecheck. It usually starts with the back end, and we feel very confident with our back end.
That's Chris Knobloch talking about the Oilers and how they're moving the puck better out of the defensive zone. Derek, you've watched it all season and all playoffs. By the way, thanks for joining.
No problem.
You've watched it all season and all playoffs. Yeah. The additions of Wallman, the additions of John Klingberg, are they better? Is he spot on with this? Are they better at that, and how key is that for their game?
Yeah, they are better with that. They really look good against the tough forechecking team in Los Angeles Kings. They're a puck possession team. The Oilers don't like to give the puck up. They're not a chip the glass off and out type team unless they're in desperate situation. They like to move the puck. They like to get the puck up the ice, and they want to hit guys like Draisaitl and McDavid in full speed, and then that's the type of defense that they want to have. And Klingberg really does that really well. We didn't really know what we're going to see from John Klingberg because he didn't play much at all in regular season. He's coming off hip surgery. He blocked a shot. He had a foot infection, but you can really tell that they got him for his ability to move the puck, and he's very calm with the puck, and he's very good with the puck. So is Jake Wallman. So I think the defense is a bit more mobile this season than it was last season, and they can get the puck up to the forwards a lot quicker.
Yeah, and I thought the point that Stan Bowman, who's a pretty smart hockey guy, made today about how this is very much like the Chicago team with Toews and Kane and the fact that they had Seabrook and Keith to get them the puck. They didn't have to – their top forwards didn't have to go get the puck. They weren't wasting energy on that. They were – their transition game was being fed. And I think this is the first time you've seen Draisaitl and McDavid – to full effect because they have that luxury.
And you know what's interesting to that too is I was wondering, like, where are they better? That was a question I was asking. You know, I mean, this is two teams that went to game 7 of the Stanley Cup final last year in a one goal game. So how much better could you be than that? But to that end, that does get the forwards going more. That does get them more. And as a result, they're spending less time in their D zone, right? And think about the Panthers, the way they play. They're going to pressure you all over the ice. Derek, that seems to me like it's the most important element now of success against the Panthers is their ability to clear that zone and get it in the hands of their forwards. Because you know once McDavid has it, like, he's gone. But you got to get it to him.
Definitely you got to get it to him. And I think what the Oilers aren't afraid to do is they're not afraid to play the puck back. They're not afraid to make two or three passes before that lane opens up. And I think if Florida wants to be aggressive on the forecheck, and they can, but they can't stretch themselves out too thin. Because if they do that, if they get in too deep, those guys, Bouchard, you include that as well, they can make those passes through that seam. And if they get those passes through that seam and you have got three guys going in on the forecheck, you're in trouble going back the other way. So I expect Florida to try to keep things tight. And they may not be able to be as aggressive as they were in the past just because how well the Oilers moved the puck in their own end.
Well, you think about that second goal against Dallas and the clinching game, right? It was two passes. It was one from their own goal line to the blue line and then a soft touch pass to beat the D at the blue line, and they had a goal. But I also think the other places that you need to look at is Stuart Skinner, the goaltender in Edmonton, and you have a nice story that's coming out today. The readers, the listeners will find it on NHL.com by the time they listen to this. But I thought it was interesting. You know, he played well last year in the final, not well enough. They lost by one goal in Game 7, and he had a tough start like the rest of the team to the series. But his mental process of getting back here, you know, I think is very illustrative of who these Oilers are.
Yeah, it is. And everyone talks about Stuart Skinner being an easygoing guy. He is an easygoing guy, and he's able to put things behind him. But he says there's a process to that. It's not, it doesn't just come naturally. He was talking about journaling and how he picked up journaling when he was younger and how that helps him mentally, and he works with mental strength coaches, and he does a lot of those things. And he admitted, and this was kind of interesting today, he admitted that that final bothered him more than he thought it would. He thought he was over it. He thought it was good. And then midway through the summer, it bothered him. So he said his wife really helped him because she's like, no, something's bothering you. You need to get over this. And finally he was able to get over it. But that was pretty candid by Stuart Skinner because he hasn't really revealed. He's a guy that nothing bothers him, kind of keeps everything at arm's length. No, I'm not bothered by anything. But that was kind of informative to see him open up like that.
You know, obviously goaltending is huge. We know that. And I think in this series, probably like we felt going into last year's Stanley Cup final, is you have an understanding of what to expect from Sergei Bobrovsky, right? You know the Bobrovsky that's going to come play. It's just a question of are they going to be good enough in front of him, because he's going to be there and he's going to be a difference maker in a positive way 9 times out of 10 or 99 times out of 100. You don't have that with Skinner, but is that unfair to Stuart Skinner right now because of his experience, because of what you just talked about, how he processes, and what he went through earlier in these playoffs too? Is it unfair to Skinner to say, we don't know which Skinner we're getting? Or should we have an understanding of we're getting the good Skinner now because that's what it is?
No, that's fair to say, because admittedly, he has been inconsistent. And he will have a good game but let in a bad goal. And I think that's the one thing that he's trying to get out of his game. Like, it's one thing to make 30, 35 saves, but if you let in that one bad goal, that can be really demoralizing. Or let in the goal that you probably should have had that one. And I think that was the problem with Stuart Skinner last year a little bit, and that's been the problem with him this year a little bit, is that he'll play well, but then let in a bad goal. And I think that's the one thing that he's trying to get out of his game. And elite goalies don't let in a bad goal every game. They let in a bad goal maybe once every 10 games, every 5 games. Stuart had a habit of letting in one goal that he didn't like. Let's just say a goal that he didn't like at least once a game.
How shocked are you that Matthias Ekholm is going to play in the series?
I was very shocked because we thought he was done, and he thought he was done. And I remember the first press conference, first time we asked Chris Knobloch about Matthias Ekholm, he says, we're going to get a second opinion. So that tells you right there that, you know, it's not good.
Not good.
If they're looking for a second opinion, and Matthias Ekholm himself said he was done, but somehow he started feeling better. He started skating, and the little bit that he skated, he started feeling better. But the interesting thing with him, it's some sort of lower body injury. They won't tell us what it is. He came back after the Four Nations. He missed about 7 or 8 games after the Four Nations. He came back, and he played 3 shifts, and he fell down by himself on 2 of them. Mm. And that tells you right there that, oh, that's not good at all. He played about 1:52. But the 2 of the shifts, he just kind of turned and fell down by himself. Second time, we thought, maybe that's a skate problem. And he went to look at his skate, and then he realized, no, it's not a skate problem. His body just gave out on him.
So he's going to be back. I think you have to have a level of expectation for what he's going to be, not to the expectation of what you hope he is going to be when normal. But again, if he's going to be playing, he's going to be playing 20 minutes a night or 22 minutes a night, and he's going to be playing key matchups. Getting him back does it, I mean, it doesn't offset the loss of Zach Hyman, but does it ease the pain of losing Zach Hyman? I know they're different positions, but they do a lot of the same things.
Yeah, well, it'll help the penalty kill if he goes out and penalty kills, and you know, and I think you can look at it this way. Maybe they'll concede one fewer goal as opposed to scoring one more goal. So maybe if it evens out in that regard, that might help him out. I think Ekholm this year, they're trying to ease him back. He's only played one game. Like, he's practiced a lot, but he's only played the one game. So Chris Knobloch said yesterday, we're not going to play him 22 minutes. Like, we're going to ease him back into.
Yeah, they are.
Yeah. They might have to if they need to, but you know, they're going to try and ease him back. But yeah, that's a big loss for the Oilers with Zach Hyman, because he does a lot of things other than score. He does, and he was the hit leader. Yep. Like, he was really doing a lot of things, some of them out of his comfort area. But getting Ekholm back will really help when it comes to keeping the Panthers away from the front of the net. And I think that's the big key for the Edmonton Oilers, is keeping those guys away from the blue paint, because that's where Florida scores most of its goals.
We were both here yesterday when Knobloch said that about time management for Ekholm. But you can't control that in the playoffs. If we go double overtime in game one, he's going to play 30, 35 minutes, and you wonder how he bounces back. But the man is a Viking, so he can do almost anything. He is a truly scary human being, and he beat the odds so bad on this. He was like, basically, like, I didn't know I was going to come back. The doctors said that I wasn't,
yeah.
And the doctors are right all the time, and I proved him wrong. And there's so much of that in this locker room, right? When you look at Klingberg, he had two hips done.
Yeah.
There's players that have never come back from that. And he's like a ballerina out there, right? You have all other kinds of guys that have come back. I the mental fortitude of this team in the wake of what happened last year, I think might be their strongest asset.
I think so too. And I think Ekholm, you know, he thought, you know, he said, if the Oilers can do their part and get in the final, I might be able to come back and play. And I think that's what he was rooting for. And he was working hard. He was working hard on his own to get himself back, doing whatever he can to rehab it. And he thought, okay, if this team can put it together. And I think that's the big thing, is this team, they could have easily been out in five games in the first round. Like, that's how they limped into the playoffs.
Yeah.
And once they got over that threshold, then it all kind of came together so quickly. All these guys came together. Like, you look at that pairing between Klingberg and Walman. They never played together in the regular season. And they threw them together, and now look at how good they're playing together. So, but yeah, that's just another thing that Ekholm said. I think we have an opportunity to get back into this playoff if our team goes deep enough. And I think he's really, really happy that they're in the Stanley Cup final.
Before I bring up my next question, I do want to point out that Sean has referred to two of the Oilers defensemen as one as a ballerina and one as a Viking.
Yes.
So just wanted to bring that up. But I, you know, it, he's flashing something at me right now that I was going to anyway. Connor McDavid. Okay. It's taken this long to get there.
Yes.
He's a great player.
Yes.
He's an all-time great player, right? But you become a legend if you win. Does McDavid, to say he has to win, he could get back again and win a different time. But have you ever seen McDavid like this? And I don't mean like this on the ice. I mean the way he's driven for team success.
No, because right now he will do whatever it takes to win a hockey game. And now he's killing penalties now. He's blocking shots, which I know a lot of people are a little worried every time he steps in front of a shot. But he will do whatever it takes to win. And he's got that look in his eye. And I think the one thing is that when they beat Vegas, he was in a bad mood. Even though they won that game, like, he was in a bad mood. And he kind of snapped at us a little bit. But he's got this laser focus that, you know, that loss last year really, really, he took it tough. Everyone saw the video of him crying in the dressing room. But he wasn't 100% healthy. He still had some problems, I think. Whatever was bothering him was still bothering him, the ab muscle, whatever it was. He is healthy. He is fired up. And he hasn't. The grind hasn't been that bad because he did miss time during the regular season, and the Oilers were able to get through, you know, 10 games to get through the last two rounds, which is a huge thing for them. And now you're going in the final. Draisaitl's not injured. Last year he had some, I think it was a rib problem or something like that. So this team is healthy going into it. But yeah, McDavid, it's going to take something special to keep him away from that Stanley Cup. And the Florida Panthers, I think, are capable of doing it, but he's just, the way he's so driven, he's so motivated, and all he cares about is winning the Stanley Cup right now.
By the way, let me just say that Connor McDavid is no less of a player if he loses this Stanley Cup and every other Stanley Cup he ever plays in. He's going to be a top five player in this league. Ray Bourque would still be one of the greatest defensemen in the world if he didn't go to the Colorado Avalanche and win a cup. What did that cup mean to him? nothing. It wasn't anything he did. Like, this tagging a cup onto the greatness of a player is such a silly thing to do.
No, that's how players are defined. They're defined by winning. They're defined by their greatness and winning. There's legendary players. There's great players in this game who may be legends in their team, but are not among the greatest of all time because they didn't win the Stanley Cup. Henrik Lundqvist is a goalie. He never won the Stanley Cup. It's not his fault. He is a Hall of Famer, and deservedly so. But is he one of the greatest of all time? He never won the Cup. All of the goalies in front of him pretty much did, right? I mean, Roberto Luongo is another one. He won it as an executive, but he never won it as a player. So you are defined. Like it or not, that's how these types of players are defined, I think.
Oh, I agree with you, Dan. And I think he not only does he have to win the Cup, he's got to win the Cup in Edmonton. Like, Connor McDavid can't go somewhere else and win the Cup. He's got to win it here. This is the team was built around him. This is his team. And he's got to win the Cup here. And I agree with you, Sean, though. If he doesn't win it this year, there's going to be other opportunities. Because I think this team is still going to be one of the best teams in the league for years to come.
We only get to see Chris Knobloch at this time, usually. I've been lucky enough to see him for two rounds with Vegas and Dallas. You know, and you did a story, I think it was last round, where, you know, he has the Midas touch right now. Mm-hmm. He's been here for 2 years, and he has yet to truly make a mistake. He's yet to have the Pete DeBoer moment in the Western Conference Final. What is it that makes him so special? Because he had no pedigree when he came here.
I think what makes him special, he doesn't make decisions based on emotion. He's so even keel. He makes decisions based on the way he sees it. And like, you're right, every decision he's made. Last season, he took Stuart Skinner out, put Calvin Pickard in against Vancouver. That worked out. Every lineup change seems to have worked out. Right? He puts in Kasperi Kapanen, and Kasperi Kapanen scores the overtime winner. Like, but I think he doesn't make the decisions on emotions. He's able to contain his emotions, control his emotions. I'm sure behind closed doors, he's kicked the odd garbage can or whatever, or lost it on the team. But in like, he's such a picture of composure, and I think that's what the players like about him. He never yells and screams at a referee. He never loses his composure. And if you can keep your composure, then that kind of resonates around the rest of the team. And I think that's the big part of it. And that's why the decisions are well thought out. He's an incredibly smart person. It's well thought out. He makes them. He looks at the pros and cons. And that's why I think so many decisions work out, because he doesn't make them in the heat of the battle. He's thought about them. He thinks about them. And the guys really respect him. And the other thing, too, is that we call him the quiet assassin, because he's not afraid to make decisions. He's not afraid to say, hey, you know, Jeff Skinner, 16 goals this year. You're going to sit out for most of the playoffs. Like, he's not afraid to make those moves. He's not afraid to make those changes. And I think that's a real big thing for a coach. One is to make the move, and two, to not be afraid. Because he knows if it backfires, it's going to come back to him. But so far, things have worked out really well.
Yeah, well, you're a picture of composure when you come on this podcast, I might say. So you're just like Knobloch. Derek, thanks so much for jumping on with us, giving us a little Oilers insight.
No problem. I appreciate you guys having me on.
So that was Derek Van Deest, our Edmonton-based correspondent who's covered this team for so many years and has covered all of Connor McDavid's career, and really has a pulse on this team and what they can be. But they're playing a team in the Florida Panthers that already is. They're the champion. If you want to be the champion, you got to beat the champion. Little riff on what Ric Flair says. If you want to be the man, you got to beat the man. But this isn't a team that's ready to lay down the Florida Panthers. This is a team that could easily win this series, that could easily shut down Connor McDavid and figure out Stuart Skinner. And if they do, they start to enter that modern-day pantheon, the salary cap pantheon, of truly elite great teams.
They're a dynasty in the making, is what they are. I mean, it's their third straight trip to the Stanley Cup final. They lost one. They won one. They win it again. They're back-to-back champs with three straight trips to the final. Is that a dynasty? I mean, the Islanders went 4 years in a row, and they won all 4 years. So you're not there yet. The Oilers in the 80s, they won a bunch, right? That's a dynasty. I think it's a dynasty in the making. I think it has to continue beyond this year. But you're repeat champions if you win again. And that is just we've seen it with the Penguins. We've seen it with the Lightning. This Panthers team, believe it or not, Sean, I think is better than last year's Panthers team. They are better offensively. They are deeper offensively. They've got 19 different goal scorers in these playoffs. So do the Oilers. 7 different defensemen have at least one goal. 4 of them have 3. Their goaltending, just as good. Their identity, the same. But they're deeper. And to me, that makes them better. And by no means are they less hungry. That is not something that I've taken away from them. They are as hungry as they were last year, and it's that old feeling of, like, you taste it once, well, you want more of it.
Dude, there was red velvet cake at the media luncheon today. When you have it once...
I had it.
You don't say, I don't ever want to do this again. You're like, when do I get to eat red velvet cake again?
That's a great... great comparison.
Thank you.
I like that comparison.
Thank you.
I do. But you know what? It didn't click right away for this Panthers team. You know, and that, and I wonder if, you know, part of that is you win the Stanley Cup, you know, in June, and then come October you're playing regular season hockey. And Paul Maurice talked about that. And that is something that, you know, is interesting because it didn't click right away, and I don't think it typically does. So we're going to hear Paul Maurice talk about that, and then after Paul Maurice talks about that, we're going to bring in Tom Galitti, who's going to talk a heck of a lot more about the Panthers. But first, here's the Panthers coach.
People had said, you must be getting used to this by now. This year was a real challenge. There was a lot of unknown on how much of it, you know, come in with the Stanley Cup hangover. It's just you need to switch energy sources because you don't have that same kind of drive in November, December. But what we found was as it got closer, it started to build. And we hit the playoffs excited. And then kind of each round that's gone on, you're back to that high energy excitement. And that's where we find ourselves today.
So that's a great point by Paul Maurice. I think it's the most difficult job in sports is to coach a champion because you have to harness the hunger. You have to generate it at times. And you have to balance while every other team is pushing and pushing and you're giving the whip and you're trying to bring your horse down. He's got to ease off the reins because they're done, right? They're still living off of June and they're tired and everything else. So, you know, I talked to Nate Schmidt about this, the defenseman. He's new to the team. And I asked him, I'm like, you know, what was it like being around this team? And did going to Finland, which Tom Galitti and I, Tom's going to be our next guest, we covered both teams in Finland, them and the Dallas Stars in the Global Series. And he's like, it came at the perfect time. It was a long extended break, only 2 games, and we were exhausted as a team. You could see it. The guys had the hangover that we all worry about, and they were able to regenerate. They saw their captain let his hair down, so to speak. He doesn't have much hair, but they saw him let his hair down in Finland and you know, be home and to celebrate that. And then they came back and they started to build. And there were some missteps and some backsteps, but they started to build, and they've built all along. And now they're here, and you know, Evan Rodriguez says, hey, hit me today. We're playing for the cup again.
Yeah. Tom, you're here with us. So are they a different team than what you saw in Finland?
I think what we saw in Finland actually is with the best of them because they flipped the switch for that week. It was you know, there were so many Finns on that team, you know, Barkov and, you know, Lundell and Listerainen and Mikkola, and like that was a celebration, and you saw the whole team wanted to win for them that week, so they played really well. And then there was a little bit of a lull out there at that again. Like you said, there were some ups and downs during the season. But it was always building towards the playoffs. You know, they kind of rested at the end of the season, but they didn't care. You know, kind of similar to Edmonton. We don't care. We're going to start on the road. So what? Well, you know, we know how to win on the road, and they've shown that. They've won 3 series on the road. They've clinched 3 series on the road. So they're very comfortable with where they are, and I think they knew what they were comfortable with. You know, going into the playoffs, and just they knew what the time when they had to put the foot down on the accelerator, and they've done that, and we've seen, you know. There was a little hiccup against Toronto, but like they've really been the same team as far as a dominant team in the playoffs.
You know what? It's such a good point because I think we see this from championship teams that win in the playoffs that understand you got to win on the road just as much you got to win at home. That they balance themselves through the regular season, right? The regular season isn't the end all be all. Carter Verhaeghe was talking to me about this earlier today. Like he said, we used to be a team known to be good in the regular season. And that's not what you want to be. You want to be a team that's good in the regular season, but not known as the team that's good in the regular season. So there's a big difference. Just like you want to be a good player in the regular season, but you don't want to be known as a regular season player. And Tom, from what we're seeing from the Panthers, that was a team that's balanced itself through the course of the season. Now you look at them on the road, they're starting in Edmonton, they're pumped about it. Like, they're 8-2 on the road. Their goal differential is plus 27 on the road. Like, they're comfortable on the road.
Yeah, they've won their last five games on the road. They went into, you know, Toronto and won a game five there, and game six there, what was it, 12-2 or something like that.
Yeah.
So, I mean, they're comfortable going. They went, they clinched, this, you know, won all three games in Carolina. Carolina had lost a game at home in the playoffs before they played them. So they know what they need to do to come here. And, you know, they were here last year, and the last two games here didn't go too well for them, but they know what the atmosphere they're going to have, you know, to encounter here for game one, and I think they're prepared for that. And I think both teams similarly have a very business-like approach to going into this series.
You know why they're good on the road? Because they're a biker gang. And biker gangs go on the road, and they take what they want. Yes. And that is what this team does. They're full of villains who love the scorn. Evan Rodriguez said, you stand on this ice tomorrow, and you look up in the stands, and you radiate in the venom. I'm saying venom. He didn't say venom. But you radiate in it, and you enjoy it, and it's what your life's been about, and it's what you want to do. And that's what they all are. They love to come into town like the cowboys from hell and take what they want and go home.
Hey, but Tom, you weren't here before, but Sean referred to as John Klingberg as a ballerina. what else was the other one? I can't even remember it.
Viking.
Oh, Matthias Ekholm was a Viking, and now the Florida Panthers are a gang of bikers, or a biker gang. But I see your point, and I do understand it. But, you know, like, Tom, the addition of Brad Marchand to this group, like, it's funny that they fire the rats at him at the end of, you know, wins on the ice, both now on the road as well. It was happening in Carolina. But it's fitting, right? Doesn't he just, like, who he is and what he's about and the style of game that he plays, it's been like this perfect marriage for the short period of time.
Oh, definitely. I mean, it's kind of funny. Like, Paul Maurice wasn't sure how he would fit, but he's been perfect. He's like the perfect. His personality on and off the ice, and the way, like, fitting the biker gang mentality, you know, he fits right into that. I think the funny thing is, you know, today someone was asking about, you know, who the biggest rat in the series, and Sam Bennett said, well, if I say Marchand, then Matthew Tkachuk will be mad because he wants to be the biggest rat. And if I say Tkachuk, then Marchand will be mad. And then someone said, how about you? He goes, he's like, I'm 1C. Like, so they have a lot of dislike. People, you know, people that you love to hate, you either hate them if you're playing against them, that otherwise you want them on your team. And they have definitely that common trait among them that fits the characteristics that Sean was just talking about as far as, you know, being the agitators.
But what they've learned in the last couple of years is to control it, right? Matthew Tkachuk, for the longest time, was what his dad called him in the Four Nations, a lunatic. He's not a lunatic anymore. He's so calculated. And one of the players said, I used to hate playing against him because he backs up all his idiocy. He'll yell at you. He'll call you names. And then he'll go make a big play. He'll go score a goal. And you feel doubly bad. Not only have you been insulted, but now he beat you on top of it. That's the worst player in the league. You don't ever want to run across that player. And they have three of them.
They have those three guys, but Tom, the guy I wanted to ask you about too is Barkov, Alexander Barkov, right? So they have the villains, Marchand, you know, Tkachuk, Bennett, but Barkov's not a villain. He's just a really, really good hockey player. But you ask anybody on the Panthers and they will tell you everybody follows him. He sets the tone. He is the guy. He's the easiest guy to play with. You always want to play with Alexander Barkov. I don't want to compare or anything like that, but I still do wonder, though, does he get enough credit?
No, I don't think he does get enough credit. It's you know, you saw the end of the Eastern Conference Final. He has that bag of tricks that he pulls out every once in a while, including that assist that he set up the winning goal for Hague. Like, people always talk about, he won another Selke trophy, so he's such a good two-way player. But he is really talented offensively that if he just went for points, I'd love to see. Like, if you said one year and said, I'm going to try to get as many points as possible, I don't care about showing, I would love to see what he could do, because I think that he really is talented offensively, and he just harnesses that all to fit into the way they need to play to win. And that's why it's like the players say, it starts with him, because he sets the example for everybody. You know, Kachuk, he could be like the, you know, the heart and soul as far as all that energy and stuff like that, but the person who sets the flat line, you know, we're going to go calmly in there and play our game, it starts with Sasha Barkov.
He's the general.
He is.
Yeah. He's the guy that you look to when things are chaotic. You might want to do all the villainous things that we talked about. You want to be at the front of the biker gang with the clubs and the chains and everything else. And there's Barkov sitting in the back. And he's going to make it all work. And he's going to tell you when it's time to go.
He's the guy in the back that just, when he just puts his foot down, everything stops.
Dude, he's jacked. He bangs on the table.
He bangs on the table and everyone looks and goes, oh no. That's it. But you know what he has too? This, it's a great relationship and rapport that he has with Paul Maurice too. Because Maurice can, you know, we've seen it on the bench. You know, he can get fiery, you know, likes to use certain words that we don't use on this podcast, right?
He has a talent for that.
Yes, he has a big time talent for that. But he's got a lot of experience, obviously, but he's also, he finds a way to flatline this team as well. I think he's done a terrific job of that. And it's funny, right? Like, because he's been doing this for a long time. He even mentioned it in the last round, Tom, that, like, for the longest time, he was on those teams that did, you know, he coached those teams that didn't have a chance. To me, it's amazing what he's done to be able to coach a team that does. And I think it's a real respect to his coaching acumen and the job he's done that he was able to coach all those teams that, for the longest time, didn't stand a chance in Carolina, you know, in Winnipeg at times, Hartford, Toronto. But he's come here, and all he's done is win.
Yeah, it was really a great choice by Bill Zito, because, like, I don't know when he was picked if people thought, oh, Paul Maurice is the coach that's going to get him over the top, because he hadn't won. He had been to a cup final with Carolina a long time ago, but he hadn't really had any – he had a pretty good team in Winnipeg that – you know, at one point that they lost to, you know, Vegas in the Western Conference Final, that they easily could have gone to a cup final that year, and they didn't. So you wondered – and he was supposedly, you know, out of the game. Our colleague Emily Benjamin wrote a great story about how he was out of the game and pretty content with it. And then he turned out to be the one of the missing ingredients. You know, Matthew Tkachuk was the missing ingredient maybe on the ice. The guy, the missing ingredient behind the bench was Paul Maurice.
The missing link.
another good analogy. Nick, whatever you want to call it.
But it is amazing, and it, because he was burnt out. He was done. And I think, like a lot of the players on this team, and I think that's why I have a lot of respect for them, is they've all found their way through their first couple of chapters that didn't work out the way they wanted to, and they've all come together to write this finals chapter that is going to make them all legendary. And if they win this series, they're as good as any of those teams we talked about in the open. They're as good as the Tampa Bay Lightning, who went to three cup finals. They're as good as the Pittsburgh Penguins, who won twice in a row. They're as good as Detroit, who won twice in a row. They're as good as any of those teams. And you can't compare them to the Edmonton Oilers and the New York Islanders, because they played under a different set of rules.
Yep. No, that was just talking about dynasties, teams that are known as dynasties.
But there's the new dynasty, because look at what happened to the Tampa Bay Lightning. Yeah. They won and they lost all their guys. They got them all. They got new guys. They won again and they lost all those guys. And then they went to the final again and then they lost more guys. And then it finally ended. Nobody, I don't care how good they are, is ever going to win four cups in a row in this league ever again, because the rules are set against it.
So, but the backdrop to this entire run for the Panthers, and Tom, you wrote about him today, Sergei Bobrovsky, right? I mean, it's amazing to me that Bobrovsky didn't start the first three games of the first round against Boston in 2023. He was the backup goalie. And now you look at him, I think game one, if I'm correct, will be his 60th consecutive start in the playoffs. Nobody's come close, you know, in obviously that time, because he's been on the team that goes to the Stanley Cup final. But his consistency is through the roof. His numbers are just terrific year in, year out, every time we're talking about this. And another one that's like, he's not blowing you away in the regular season. He's good. But when a time comes and he steps up, there's Bobrovsky, and he's just been the backdrop to this whole thing.
Yeah, I mean, he was terrific again in the Eastern Conference Final. What, he gave up 8 goals in the entire series. So he just, you know, we had a little, you know, people are questioning him after the first two games against Toronto, which I think Florida would say that we're not, they're not play well in front of him. But what has he done since then? You know, it's been, but he's been incredible, and he's that calming force. You know, we talk about Bobrovsky being the calming force at the front. He's the calming force at the back. They just know that he's always going to be, you know, even if the game does not go well, he knows the next game he's going to be right back to where he was. He doesn't get, he doesn't, you know, doesn't really usually get rattled. He's got a lot of experience back there. It's kind of funny, like, you know, you said he wasn't the starting goalie before. Before that, that stretch that began with the first run of the Cup final, was he was known as the guy who could, who didn't win in the playoffs, and now 60 straight playoff starts, like you said, start for game one, and then, you know, 12 playoff series. This is 12 playoff series in 3 years.
He's no longer the albatross, which is what he was,
right?
And he might have the best flow in this whole series. His Ooh. Hair is legendary.
His hair is good. Ooh, that's a good one. That's a good topic for the next podcast we do, but.
You know, he cuts his hair. He cut his hair last year right after they won the Cup, and then he lets it grow.
He just lets it grow?
Yeah, he cut it all the way down, and then it grows.
To look like you?
Not that short, but pretty short. If you see his pictures from the Cup parade, it's really short, and then it grows throughout the entire year.
He's got good flow. Tom, this was great. Thanks so much for hopping on with us, all right?
Always enjoyable.
Great stuff there from Tom. Great stuff from Derek. Good drop-ins from our producer, Bob Bender, right? We got a little... Paul Maurice, Knobloch, Marchand, McDavid. I mean, good stuff here. So now let's ruin it all with our predictions. What's your prediction?
Pain.
Ah, all right, no. Clubber.
My prediction, and it's on NHL.com, is the Panthers in six.
Okay. My prediction, and it's on NHL.com, is the Oilers in six. I think I'll go first. I think the Oilers, like Florida a year ago, learned a lot. I think they take those lessons into this series, and they don't get off to the start they did last year. Obviously, the start ruined them last year. When you go lose the first three games, they had to make history to get to Game 7, and they couldn't finish the job in Game 7. That doesn't happen this time. They are a deeper team. They're a more balanced team. I'm not talking more balanced and deeper than the Panthers. I'm talking about more balanced and deeper than they were a year ago. We talked about it with Derek, Chris Knobloch. We had the quote, the way they move the puck out of the defensive zone, I think that's going to be a key in this series, and they do it well. And they have, with all due respect to Alexander Barkov, they have the best player in the world. And the best player in the world, we've seen it already this season, makes the biggest difference. He did in the Four Nations. He will in the Stanley Cup final.
They had the best player in the world last year, and it did nothing for them.
Yeah, but he's got experience now.
Yeah, but look, this Florida team, they just know what to do, and they know how to do it, and you know, they're not afraid of being here. They get a split here, and they go home, and they're in control, right? They, like you said, they've won. But I on the road in each of the three series so far, when I made my pick, if it comes back here for Game 7, I think they're in trouble.
Yeah,
which is why I said they have to do it in six. But it's just going to be great. Like that, it doesn't even almost matter. It matters so much to the 46 players that are involved. But otherwise, it doesn't. There's no losers in this Stanley Cup final.
What you wrote with you talked to Eddie Olczyk, right? What did he say? This is going to be the best reality TV that you're going to find.
Best reality TV. Tune in to TNT. On Wednesday at 8 p.m., it's got it all. It's got villains. It's got plot lines. It's got revenge. It's got everything that a good reality TV show like Survivor needs to be successful, and that's what this Stanley Cup Final has.
Absolutely, and it's got us, too, and we're going to be continuing to do this throughout the Cup Final, and it's got us is maybe the most important part of it, by the way. Just want to say, you know, maybe bias, a little bias on that end, but... We're going to continue to do this tentatively, most likely. We'll be back doing another one of these after Game 2. We'll see where we are at that point after Game 2.
We're going to be by the pool drinking margaritas.
Okay. I could take that, doing the podcast like that. I'm fine. I'm good with that. We're not going to be by the pool here in Edmonton, but it's going to be fun. It's going to be fascinating. No question about it. So, hope you enjoyed it. Keep listening. Certainly watch. As a reminder, the podcast brought to you by Skip. Skip to the good part and get groceries, meals, and essentials delivered right to your door on Skip. Enjoy the Stanley Cup Final.